Popular exercise in middle age. BBC News.
Now on Radio 4, the classic serial and the final part of Angel Pavement by J.B. Priestley, dramatised by Martin Jameson. It's 1930 and the arrival of James Goldsby, played by Henry Goodman, on the doorstep of Twig and Dursingham of Angel Pavement, London, EC1, has transformed the fortunes of the firm and the demeanour of its employees. Our guide is Marcus Brigstock.
When I last spoke to you, James Goldsby was about to sail for the Baltic and was reassuring the outwardly brittle Miss Matfield.
Don't forget to come back.
How could I possibly forget about Angel Pavement?
And we have no reason to doubt him. And neither does his daughter, Lena.
I can't believe you think those people are your friends.
And we're going to make a lot of money.
We?
Can he mean Mr. Dursingham, of Twig and Dursingham, for whom he is procuring the finest Baltic veneers at knocked-down prices?
We'll do more business in the next 2 weeks than we've done in the last 3 months!
Or Twig and Dursingham's cautious cashier, Herbert Smeath.
I'm still concerned that he should be leaving us at such a critical time in our expansion.
He said you would be, which is why you, Smeath, old chap, are getting a rise. How would another pound a week suit you?
It suits him excellently. A chance to accumulate a significant nest egg for their old age. However, his daughter Edna has lost her job, and Mrs. Smeath has invited her cousin, Fred Mitty, and his wife around to celebrate their windfall.
Come along, Dad! Buck up, join in the fun!
Please don't call me Dad in company.
Come on, Pa, no shirking. Here, show us a conjuring trick.
Fred, you've gone too far.
Abracadabra!
Conjuring tricks?
What?
More port, Dora.
Oh, yes, please, Ethan.
Another whiskey for me. Very nice whiskey, Pa. Only the best to toast a man who's going up in the world. Edie's told us all about it.
I haven't actually had the pay rise yet.
It's all right, Herbert. I opened an account at Sawley's. We won't have to settle for a week or two.
So, what plans have you got for your ill-gotten gains, Pa? Come on, tell Cousin Fred.
I haven't been given a key to the vaults of the Bank of England.
Which is why I've been finding out about hire purchase agreements.
But perhaps we should talk about this when the guests have, you know...
You only live once, old chap, and you only die once. Enjoy life while you're here, that's what I say.
Actually, you know, there is a conjuring trick I'd like to do.
Oh, what's that, Pa?
Nothing. He doesn't do magic, do you, Herbert?
Dark horse, your husband.
Need a wand?
Tell us some more about Mr. Snooker.
Now we want to see the trick!
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 Trick! Trick!
I think I'm going to make myself disappear. Upstairs to bed. I'm a little tired. Sorry.
Herbert Smeath is not a willful and autocratic man. But as he places his hand on the banister to go upstairs, he notices that it's trembling.
Come and blast!
Smeath is not the only employee of Twig and Dursingham for whom the arrival of Goldsby and daughter has provoked a good deal of inner turmoil.
Lena. Lena. Lena!
Inner turmoil that luckily has been stifled each night for the last week since Turgis, the junior clerk, first encountered 19-year-old Lena at the offices in Angel Pavement. Stifled because Turgis has spent every evening in the freezing cold on the street outside the Goldsby residence at 4A Carrington Villas, Maidavale W9.
Hello, Miss Goldsby. Remember me? Yes, it's Turgis. That's right. I wiped the chair for you that time at the office.
It would be wrong to think Turgis foolish in this nightly vigil. The alternative is a night alone in his lodgings in Camden, where the little gas fire demands a shilling in the meter and offers far less heat than the warmth of his desire for Miss Goldsby.
Hello, Lena. Sorry, can I call you Lena? Yes, that's right. I work with your father. Do you like the talkies? Who's your favourite?
Mine's Lulu Castellar, and you're not going to believe this, but I think she's nowhere near as pretty as you.
Turgis is practicing hard for the meeting that he knows will come sooner or later. He also knows that it will take more than a smooth tongue to make the right impression.
Well, if Mr. Borstein could telephone me at his earliest convenience. Yes, it's about increasing the order. Turgis, at Twig and Dursenham. I'll be very grateful.
Mr. Smee?
Yes, Miss Sellers?
What happened to that chap?
What chap?
When I started, there was this chap. Oh, his hair was a right mess. Like he'd never had it cut. I hate to speak badly of anyone, Mr. Smeath, but this fellow, well, some of his clothes.
Yes, Miss Sellers, I know the one you mean. He had those old collars.
Were they supposed to be brown?
That's a cool question, Miss Matfield.
He could be quite grumpy with the customers.
And if memory serves me correctly, he used to sit over there.
That's right, where that smart, polite, cheery fella sits now. All clean-shaven and just so.
Anyone would think he was out to impress someone.
Oh, you think you're funny?
That's queer, Mr. Smeath. That's the voice. The very same voice.
All right, that's enough. Goodness me, it's the same chap, Miss Sellers. Just pop into the bank. I'll be back in half an hour.
You're not mad, are you?
No.
It's only a bit of leg pulling. You do look an awful lot smarter, though.
That's nobody's business but mine.
No need to jump at me. You don't mind me saying, do you?
No, that's all right.
The thing is, my friend, her father's a policeman, and she's got two tickets given for the police minstrels. Well, she can't go, can she, because she's in bed with the flu, and now I've got the tickets, and I wondered if you'd like to come with me. Tonight.
Oh.
I know it's short notice.
Well, that's just it.
But you're already fixed.
In a manner of speaking.
With some new girl, then.
Well, that definitely is my business.
That's me squashed again. I'll shut my mouth and go and post these letters then.
Anyone here live made a fair way?
Well, I do.
No, you don't. You live in Camden Town.
I've got a good friend in Maida Vale. I'm always going there.
Dolsby's gone off to the Baltic and left his daughter in Maida Vale. She spent all the money. Doesn't have a bank account. Got a wire from Dolsby. Give the girl some cash in advance of his commission.
Does Mr. Smeath know about this?
We can't let the poor girl starve.
Well, I'll take it straight after work.
You'll need the address.
Oh, no.
What?
I mean, yes. I've no idea where they live. Of course not.
Hello?
I've come from the office. Twig and Dursingham.
You've got the money?
Yes. I came as soon as I could.
How much is it?
£12.
At last!
You have to sign a receipt.
So?
I don't have a pen.
I suppose you'd better come in.
Mr. Dursenham said I had to make sure I handed it to you personally.
Oh, I adore having money, don't you?
Yes.
Beastly when you suddenly find you haven't got any. Oh, I remember you.
Do you?
Of course I do. I came to the office that day. You must remember.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely, eh? Why definitely?
Well, you might be annoyed with me when I say.
Well, I shan't know unless you tell me.
Well?
Go on. Say it. Whatever it is.
I thought you were the prettiest girl I'd ever spoken to in my whole life.
Are you serious?
Of course.
What a marvellous thing to say. Is that why you brought the money?
Oh, I volunteered specially.
So what do I have to do to get it?
What?
The money.
Sign. Sign the receipt.
Is that all?
Yes.
You'd better give it to me, then.
Just there.
What's your name?
Turgis.
Your first name?
Harold.
Oh, I don't like Harold much.
Neither do I.
Mine's Lena.
I know.
Oh, quite the detective. What else do you know about me?
Nothing.
Not sure I believe you.
I heard your father say your name in the office.
You don't like working there, do you?
It's all right.
I'd die if I had to work in a place like that, so dark and dismal. And they call it Angel Pavement. Can't imagine an angel going near the place. Shall I tell you a secret?
If you like.
I'm going on the stage. I nearly went on when I was in Paris. A man wanted me for film work. He said he could get me a part right away. Do you think I'd be any good for the films?
Oh, you'd be wonderful. Like Lulu Castellar, only better.
You really think so?
I go to all the films.
You've gone red.
Oh, it's warm compared to outside. Can I take off my coat?
No.
What?
Let's go to the movies.
Oh.
You haven't got to go home or anything.
No, it's only... I don't have much money on me. I've only got 1 and 6.
Well, I've got £12. So no arguments.
It's starting.
Lady coming through.
Shh. Turgis ought to be in heaven. He's on the front row of the balcony of the Maida Vale Picture Palace with Lena Goldsby.
Ah, it's got Hunter York in it. I adore Hunter York.
Yeah, he's good.
Excuse me, can you tell me what time the train is?
And what do you think of her, Mary Meriden? Am I prettier than her as well?
Oh, I should say so.
You shush yourself.
A dream has come true. A dream so magical that Turgis doesn't even try to hold Lena's hand. But he knows that every frame that leaps onto the screen and leaps away again is nibbling at the evening. A true heaven would be a balcony seat high above time and change.
You know you said you only had 1 and 6.
Yeah.
If I said I wanted chocolates, would you spend it on me?
Of course I would. Though I need tuppence for the bus home. If I had hundreds and hundreds of pounds, I'd spend them all. If you asked me to.
It's all right. I'm not hungry yet. Oh. You can come back and have some supper afterwards. Oh. If you like. You don't mind it on a tray, do you?
Oh, looks very nice.
I'll serve it out. You mix the cocktails.
Oh,
You do know how to mix a cocktail?
I've seen it done on the films.
You are joking.
I'm more of a beer and whiskey man.
Then you need to taste a Goldsby smasher. A big splash of this. A little slosh of that. And a dash of the other. Shake it all up. And pour a little piece of liquid heaven. There. To Angel Pavement.
Angel Pavement.
Like it?
It's fine.
Then you must have some more. Lots. More.
It makes me all glowy.
Drink up. And you can tell me all the office secrets.
Well, I don't really know any.
There must be some about Mr. Dursingham.
Well, he's not much good at business. Everyone knows that.
Daddy thinks he's a fool.
It's a good job Mr. Goldsby came along, that's all I can say. The firm was in a rotten state before.
Well, you better make the most of him.
What?
He doesn't like London. Hates staying in one place. He'll be moving on pretty soon from what he's been saying.
What do you mean? Soon? You mean he's not coming back from the Baltic?
No, of course he is. I don't know. I shouldn't have said anything. Please don't tell anyone. He'll be furious if he knew I'd been blabbing.
No, of course not. But if he goes, would you go too?
What a dreary, depressing conversation. Would you like to kiss me?
Yes.
Well, you can't. Unless you say you adore me and are madly in love with me and that I'm the most wonderful person you've ever met and you'll do anything I ask.
You are. I am. I will.
I don't believe you.
I've thought about you ever since I saw you in the office. I've been coming to the house every night, standing outside the window, just hoping to see you.
You didn't.
Every night.
Funny boy.
Can I kiss you?
You haven't said what you would do for me.
I could take you out.
I'd like to go to the Caladium.
Tomorrow?
You'll have to book. It gets very busy.
Of course. Anything.
I'll meet you outside at 7:45.
Oh, Lena.
What?
I don't know what to say.
Don't you? Don't you, darling? Then don't say anything.
Lena.
Tickets.
Camden Town.
The conductor of the 31 bus, noticing the young man with the large nose, the open mouth and the irregular teeth, whose watery brown eyes are shining as they stare into vacancy and whose face has a queer, glowing pallor, concludes that the poor chap is sickening for something. He has no idea that Turgis is in an ecstasy of devotion in which remembered kisses glitter like stars.
Mr. Smith?
Yes, Mr. Turgis?
Please, can I have an advance? £1 will do.
You know my feelings on this matter. Once you start...
I wouldn't ask, normally. Yeah, you know I wouldn't, but it's something very special. Please.
Just this once, Turgis. Don't ask me again.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you so much.
Next.
2 for the 8 o'clock show, please.
15 shillings, 9 and 6, 4 and 6, or 2 and 9.
Oh, right, I'll have the 4 and 6.
Maybe 9 bob, sir.
9?
2 tickets at 4 and 6 each, 9 shillings.
Of course.
It's 7:30, so there's no point in going home, and Turgis waits outside as the audience starts to arrive, knowing that every passing minute brings Lena Gulsby closer to him. At 7:58...
You coming in, sir? The curtain's about to go up.
Well, I'm waiting for someone, Tar.
Oh, girls always like to keep a chap on tenterhooks.
At 8:05, Turgis wonders whether he's waiting at the right entrance. And at 8:15, his eyes begin to smart. At 10:00... Turgis, with 2 useless tickets in his pocket and a lump compact of misery in his throat, catches the bus to Maida Vale.
Come on.
Yes?
Is Miss Gulsby in?
No.
Do you know where she's gone?
No.
She's not ill, then, or anything?
Ill?
What's funny?
Well, between you and me and the gatepost, about 7:30, a young gentleman called for her in his own motor car. Very good-looking he was.
She just turned up out of the blue.
Well, if he did, it's a good job she'd spent the last 3 hours getting herself all tartied up. Any message?
No.
no message.
Tickets. Oi, you, where you going, mate?
Camden.
What?
Camden Town, are you deaf?
Happy Christmas to you too.
Yes, Christmas is coming. And if Turgis could see through the hot tears stinging his eyes, he would perhaps smile at the crimson rash of holly berries, robins and Father Christmases adorning the shops as they rattle their way back to Camden. Or perhaps not.
Devilish cold.
Oh, Mr. Gorsby.
Well, colder in here and places where it's 20 below. Where is everyone?
They've all gone home for New Year, just now as it happens. I said I'd lock up. Surprised you didn't see them. Mr. Dursingham told us you wouldn't be back until January.
Someone has to make sure the money keeps flowing. Out here or in the office?
What?
Don't look at me like that. Spoiling your handsome features. It's a few urgent letters. An hour of your time.
I'm going to a dance. Welcome in the new year.
Oh, the gay life, huh? Champagne at midnight.
It's at the girls' club where I live. I suspect it'll be rather feeble.
What time does it start?
About 9, I suppose.
All right. We'd better get cracking.
If Miss Matfield suspects that Mr. Gorsby has engineered his late arrival in order to guarantee they can work alone, then nothing about her behaviour betrays this.
Yours persistently, James Gorsby.
Do you never simply sign a letter, yours faithfully or yours sincerely?
No, should I?
I'll go and type these up.
It's nearly 8 o'clock.
Well, you said they were urgent.
Well, they don't need to go until the morning. It's not as if New Year's Day is any kind of holiday. Except in Scotland, of course.
By the time I get back, I'll have missed all the food.
In which case, as we have been working together, we shall feed together.
No, no, stop.
No, you've got to finish it.
I daren't have any more.
Yeah, we cannot have coffee until we finish the wine.
Oh. I feel as if I've had 15 club dinners rolled into one.
Well, you look well on it. You're full of fight and fun. You're too good for Angel Pavement, I can tell you.
I don't need you to tell me.
You see that? You're alive. You're not like these other poor devils in there. That's why I've been keeping my eyes on you. I don't know. Have you noticed me? Keeping my eyes on you.
Perhaps.
Like that evening in the ship.
Oh, yes. I remember. You seemed almost human.
Almost human? I'm a damn sight too human.
Oh, no, you can't be too human. I've been working there for ages, and believe me, they're awful creatures, like Mr. Smeath, all grey and withered.
He's better than that dreary youngster you got there.
Turgis.
It's not your style, is it?
What? Turgis, help!
He might as well be a shadow flicking around the place.
Little Poppy Sellers adores him. Isn't it strange? The way everybody amounts to something different to everybody else.
Do you know why I came to your place?
I've no idea.
It was the name.
What, Twig and Dursingham?
Angel Pavement. If I hadn't come looking for that angel, I shouldn't be here. And you wouldn't be trotting along with me. It's 9:45. What about that dance of yours?
Oh, Lord. Is that the time? Mm-hmm. Hardly seems worth it. I very rarely go dancing, but tonight.
If you want to go dancing, Miss Matfield, you shall go dancing.
What is this place?
One of the Anglo-Baltic chaps. I can't actually remember his name.
Veneers.
Exactly.
Shouldn't we go and talk to someone?
No, I think you should dance with me. It's nearly midnight.
All right. Why not?
Wait there, and I'll just grab a couple of drinks from that waiter.
Oh, no, please. Don't leave me.
Hello, you.
Hello.
All on your own on New Year's Eve?
Definitely not.
Oh, it's nothing to be ashamed of, my dear. I think you're very fine looking, whatever anybody says.
Oh, get off me.
It's nearly midnight.
And it's time that you, sir, were in bed.
What's the idea?
The idea is to make yourself scarce.
Sorry, I think I spilled some of the drink.
I could have dealt with him, you know.
Yes, I believe you could.
Four, three, two, one.
Goodbye, 1930. Oh, sorry.
There it is!
Yes!
Happy New Year, Miss... Oh, damn it, I can't keep calling you Miss Matfield, can I?
Lillian. My name's Lillian.
Well, Happy New Year, Lillian.
Will it be?
I'm sure of it.
How do you know?
Because anything's possible if you want it to be.
What sort of thing?
Come here. Mm. Lillian.
Lillian Matfield cannot describe the experience of being kissed by Mr. Golspie as either pleasant or unpleasant. It's hard to categorize at all. Yes, her blood quickened under his masculine onslaught, but if her reaction belongs anywhere, it is in the fire, flood and earthquake department.
We've got to see more of each other.
Have we indeed?
You're the sort of girl I like. I don't say that very often, I can tell you.
I'm sure I'm very grateful.
Oh, there you go again. We'll have some more nights out together, shall we?
That was a bit too much of a crowd for my liking.
Well, just the two of us, then. Roaming around a bit. Going to a show or two.
Oh. It's just here.
Oh. The Burpenfield Residential Hostel for Ladies.
My father found it for me when I first moved to London. I've never managed to get away.
We could get away. You and I. When the weather starts to change. Down at the coast.
Oh, I've always dreamt of having weekends away.
I know this small hotel.
No, stop. I'm sorry. I spoke without thinking.
Oh, you did too much thinking. You don't look too cheerful on it.
Oh, really? Men are the limit. You try to make it sound as if it's all for my benefit. But when it comes down to it, you want your own way, no matter what it costs to me.
And Miss Matfield holds up her ringless hand.
Well, you could buy something. A cheap imitation thing. No one would know. I can get it if you like.
No, thank you.
Think it over.
I won't.
Lillian, you might regret it one day.
I have to go.
Think it over.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Did you all see out the old year enjoyably?
It was very pleasant, Mr. Smith. How was yours?
Very pleasant.
This, as you might remember from our last encounter with Mr. Smith, is unlikely to be an accurate description.
Where are you going?
Out.
It's New Year's Eve.
And I intend to enjoy myself, if that's allowed.
All I said was that we should be careful.
The more money you get, the worse you are.
It's £1 a week. I want to do something with it, not just spend it.
What you mean is, you don't want to spend it on my friends and relatives.
The bill from the off-licence...
£3.15. The way you talk, you'd think it was £15.03.
Nearly £4. My pay rise is £1 a week. That's a month down the drain. Or rather down Fred Mitty's gullet.
Oh, that's right. Bring him in. Next Christmas, I'll tell everyone to keep away and we'll all go into the workhouse for our celebrations.
I'm not having debts piling up because you've decided to open a free pub for Fred Mitty and his cronies.
I'm not listening. In fact, I'm going right now. And just so you know, I'm going to Fred's. So there.
As long as you come back sober.
What did you say?
You've as good as called me a miser 12 times tonight.
Because you are!
Very pleasant indeed. How about you, Turgis? How did you see in the turn of the year? Mr. Turgis, did you hear me? And shouldn't you answer that telephone? Turgis!
What?
The telephone!
All right. Twig and Dursenham. Yeah.
Well, what about you, Miss Sellers?
Yep.
Can I talk to you, Mr. Smith? In private?
Of course. What is it?
I suppose so.
I'm worried about Mr. Turgis. Look at him.
I'll have to check.
He was all smart before Christmas.
I think he's in a file somewhere.
He does seem a little tattered around the edges again.
Only, well, I heard Mr. Dursingham and Mr. Goldsby talking about him. Mrs. He's been rude to some of the suppliers.
Oh,
I'd hate him to lose his job.
Yes, it was on the 19th. Yep.
What are you looking at?
I think you and I need a little chat, young man. We'll head over to the White Horse at lunchtime. Why don't you run ahead and order a couple of glasses of bitter?
Here you are.
I suppose.
I'm just popping into Mr. Benenden's for a few ounces of his special mixture. You can find us somewhere quiet to sit.
A happy new year, Mr. Bennett.
Oh.
He's not here.
Who on earth are you?
I could ask you the same question.
I'm sorry. And I've been coming into this shop for years and years, and Mr. Benenden, he's always here.
Not today, he isn't.
What's happened? He hasn't sold up, has he?
Knocked down by a car in Cheapside last night.
He's not...
He's in hospital. St. Bartholomew's.
Oh, dear.
What's this all about?
Pardon me?
The chat.
Chat?
You all right?
I had a bit of a shock, that's all. Nothing to do with you.
Well, what is to do with me?
Your work.
Well, what's wrong with my work? I do it all right, don't I?
You do it, yes, but I wouldn't say it was all right. And neither does Mr. Dursingham, or anyone else around the office, for that matter.
Why has everyone got it in for me?
No one's got anything against you, lad. But we can all see your heart's not in it. Is that all you've got to say for yourself? A sigh?
I'm not feeling so well, Mr. Smeath.
Perhaps you should see a doctor.
No, it's not that.
What is it? Come on, boy, spit it out.
It's a girl.
Oh, I see. Ought you to be, marrying her or something of that nature?
No, it's nothing like that.
Bit of a quarrel, eh?
Sort of, I suppose.
Well, if she's the quarrelsome type, then my advice to you is to find yourself a different girl.
Is that what you do, Mr. Smeath?
Of course not. I'm an old married man, remember? But you, well, no matter how you're feeling now, it won't last. Take my word for it.
Well, how long does anything last, Mr. Smeath?
Duff all the questions.
I mean to say, what's the point of anything?
The point is, you get yourself smartened up, shave every morning, try not to look like you hate everybody, crack a friendly joke with the suppliers, knuckle down, and there's an opportunity, a future for you right here at Twig and Dursingham.
I'm not sure about that.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
No, boy. You meant something by it.
Look, I mean... The only thing keeping Twigs together is all this new business what's come with Mr. Goldsby. If he goes, what happens then?
He's not going, though, is he?
He might be.
He can't make any money without us, so he's not going anywhere, is he?
All right, he isn't.
No, Turgis, speak up. Where have you got this idea from?
It was something I heard. That's all. I can't tell you where... Oh, I wish I'd never said anything now.
When did you hear this?
You've got to swear not to tell anyone I said anything.
Is this something to do with the girl?
Please, Mr. Smeath. You'll get me into trouble.
All right, Turgis. I won't say anything.
I'll do my best to buck up. I promise.
Mr. Smeath knows there is no connection whatsoever between Mr. T. Benenden's unfortunate road accident and young Turgis's admonitions of doom. But together they remind him that things happen over which he has no control. As if at any moment, the very tram he is sitting on could leave the tracks and career into the nearest shop. Mr. Smeath doesn't sleep that night, but sits alone in the dark, smoking Mr. Benenden's special mixture, telling himself again and again that the walls are not cracking, nor the foundations slithering away from him.
I'm sorry? I don't think I quite understand, Mr. Dersingham.
Well,
Oh, for God's sake, man, it's perfectly simple. So far, I've been working the commission on delivery, but that's too slow. Some of these orders take months to come through.
We have to wait for our money, too.
And if it weren't for me, there wouldn't be any orders in the first place.
He has a point, Smith. It's a considerable amount of money.
Because I brought you a considerable amount of business.
From what I understand, it's being ordered faster than we can supply it.
True.
Which is precisely why it is unreasonable to ask me to wait. You think I don't have people chasing me for money too?
I have no idea.
Well, when can you have it done?
Mr. Smith will arrange a check for you this afternoon. Won't you, old chap?
Good work. I'll be in later to pick it up. And I do not expect to be kept waiting for this one.
Yes. Well,
are you quite sure about this, Mr. Dersingham?
I know. He's the complete bouncing bounder.
I'll have to talk to the bank. This much commission in advance?
But, like he says, it's not as if we don't have the orders.
Has it ever crossed your mind what would happen if Mr. Golspie left us?
You must think I was born yesterday.
He could just up and leave and take all the business with him.
That's where I'm ahead of you, Smith. When he raised his commission malarkey, I was ready for him. He signed an agreement giving Twig and Dersingham exclusive rights to his agency for the Baltic veneers. So, give him his commission, and if he decides to up and leave, then frankly, we're better off without him.
Don't you think it's strange that he agreed to that so easily?
Oh, Smith, you are such an old washerwoman. He just wants the money in his pocket. You see, Smith, you might understand the numbers, old chap, but I understand people.
And so, the cheque is drawn.
Mr. Golspie.
Shush!
Oh, hello there. Is that the Elysian dining rooms?
Mr. Smith asked me to give you this.
Yes, a table for two. One of your secluded little nooks.
It's a cheque or something.
Leave it on the desk.
Yeah, seven would be perfect. Thank you.
Shut the door as you go, boy. You off home, Turgis?
Maybe.
Ooh, maybe.
Something I have to do. Not that it's anything to do with you.
Squashed again.
What about you, Miss Matfield?
A few more letters to type up. I can lock up.
Don't work too late.
I won't.
See you in the morning.
But Mr. Smith collides with Hasty Turgis in the doorway.
Oof! For you!
And Smith finds himself thinking,
oh my, he looks worse than ever. Shame of it is, he should be having such a good life, young chap like him. No responsibilities.
It's all right, Mr. S. You go first. He's not a bad old stick. When I'm married to Lena and we've got our own place, I'll invite him round, him and Mrs. Smith.
And yes, you would be right to think that the last time we saw Turgis with Mr. Golspie's daughter, marriage wasn't exactly on the cards.
Lena, I want you to know I'm not angry. Of course I'm not. I love you and I forgive you. I forgive you anything. That's why we're perfect together. Don't you see? Oh, Lena, I knew you would.
Hello. Oh, it's you. Do you want to see my father about something?
No. I want to see you.
Why? What about?
Oh, you know. Everything. Can I come in?
I'd make yourself scarce if I were you. My father will be back any minute.
No, he won't.
How do you know that?
He's gone to a restaurant. I heard him make the booking.
You've been spying on him?
No.
And spying on me, no doubt. You've been standing outside my window again, I know that much.
I want to talk to you.
Well, I don't want to talk to you. Can't you take a hint?
But why? We had a good time, didn't we?
Only because I was sorry for you and didn't have much to do that night.
Lena, please, listen to what I have to say.
I don't even want to look at you. Have you seen yourself in a mirror recently?
If you'd listen to me, I can explain.
Go away, you're a fool.
Oh, you have to listen.
Get your filthy hands off me.
I am a fool. And I'm going to kiss you to show how much of a fool I am.
I hate you, don't you understand? If you don't let go, I'm going to scream until somebody comes, you dirty, filthy, disgusting pig.
Kiss me. Stop it. Shut up. Shut up. Grr! Lena? Lena! Oh, God!
Excuse me. I'm looking for a Mr. T. Benenden. He's a tobacconist.
Second from the end.
Thank you. Mr. Benenden?
Mr. Smith?
Your niece told me about the accident. Must have been a shock to the system, eh?
Accident? There was nothing. No. It's what they've discovered that's going to do for me. Heart bad. Kidneys bad. And they haven't even got to me liver.
Did you know you were ill? I don't quite see what's so amusing.
Oh, Lillian, what do you make of the Elysian dining rooms?
Very nice.
I think they're heavenly. Heavenly?
Sorry?
Is something the matter? You seem a little out of sorts. You've hardly touched your grub.
I went to a shop.
Well, should I be interested in what kind of shop exactly?
One that sells imitation jewellery. Rings. That sort of thing.
Oh.
You said you knew a nice hotel. I presume they are very discreet.
Life, as they say, is too short not to enjoy it while we're here.
Yes. You're right.
I know he's in there.
No, stop. You can't go in there.
Mr. Gosby.
Who the hell are you?
Turgis.
What in God's name is he doing here?
Lena.
Lena's my daughter, yes. What on earth are you blabbing about, boy?
I think I've killed her.
For God's sake, man. Can't you drive any faster?
I'm doing my best. And to you, mate!
They're going
to
hang me, aren't they?
Not before I've squeezed the life out of you.
Mr. Gosby, we still don't know what's happened. Not for certain.
My picture will be in the papers. Like the film stars.
It's just here, on the right. Lena!
She was there. On the floor, just there.
Lena!
Daddy? Daddy!
Oh, my God, Lena. What has he done to you?
I'm all right.
Well, we must call a doctor.
No, really, just get him away from me.
I thought you were dead.
I went limp because I thought he was going to kill me. It was the only way to make him stop.
That's my girl.
Thank God you're all right.
Where's the telephone? I'll call the police. It's attempted murder.
Attempted murder? Ha ha! This pathetic little monkey's not worth it. You think you're some kind of lady killer, huh?
No!
Well, you're no good at it! Not in either sense of the word, so we're not going to bother with the police.
We have to do something.
What I ought to do is give you such a good hiding that you don't even want to look at a girl, let alone lay your hands on one for the next year!
I won't, I promise! I won't!
All right, I am not going to do that either!
Mr. Gosby!
You don't come near my daughter ever again! Understand?
Yes!
You don't come back to Angel Pavement. You don't come within a mile of this flat. You've been lucky tonight, but if I ever see you again, your luck will run out. There and then.
I'll disappear. I promise. Forever.
Because if I ever do see you, it will be in the dock or in the madhouse. You get out of here, boy. Go on. Run.
As Turgis lights the inadequate gas fire in his freezing lodgings, there is only one question in his mind.
Where did it all go wrong? Why? What do I have to do to be just a little bit happy?
But answer comes there none. Just the gas fire, popping, sputtering.
The gas fire.
The answer. The only answer.
Yet
Turgis moves as if led by uncertain spectral hands, stuffing the torn pages of his treasured movie magazines into every crack and crevice. And when the room is finally sealed tight...
Hang on. I suppose I ought to leave a note. A letter.
Turgis hates writing letters, and consequently there is no pen nor ink in the room.
Oh, well. Better off without. It's sadder that way. Right. This is it. Just blow out the flame and... Wait. Stop. No.
If Turgis believes the gas in the fire to be an answer to his questions, unfortunately now, even that is silent.
A shilling. Sixpence. A penny. A halfpenny.
Sevenpence halfpenny.
Go!
Across the city, Mr. Smith, still dazed by the discovery of Mr. T. Benenden's inner decay, takes a shortcut through the cemetery at Bunhill Fields.
Nonconformists.
I beg your pardon?
All them graves. Over there. All them mouldering headstones. Daniel Defoe. Bunyan. Blake. God wanted nonconformists, every one of them.
I think I know the way, thank you.
They didn't, but they're all conforming now.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
As Mr. Smith scurries away, snow starts to fall. A thick blanket of white magic covering the whole city until Mr. Smith is no longer one of a thousand hurrying figures, but a man alone amid the whirling flakes. In his lodgings in Camden Town, Turgis snores, oblivious to the world turning to a mysterious alabaster. At the Burpenfield Residential Hostel for Ladies, Lillian Matfield, alone in her room, oblivious to the world changing outside, tries on the imitation wedding ring.
Marry you? I'll have to think about it.
And in Maida Vale, Mr. Gosby puts his hands on his daughter's shoulders as they look out at the snow smothering the city and smile. On the floor behind them, two suitcases, a hatbox and Lena's trunk lie open, half-packed, overflowing with her flamboyant wardrobe.
Sit down, Smith.
You don't look very well, Mr. Dursingham.
He's gone.
Yes, I heard there was a to-do with Mr. Turgis last night.
Not Turgis, man. Gosby.
Who? What do you mean? He's gone.
Cleared out. Left his flat and everything. Not even a forwarding address.
Well, at least we have the signed agreement that the agency stays with us.
Oh, yes. We've got the agreement all right.
I don't think I quite understand.
Mikorskis have raised their prices. Doubled them. They're more expensive than the old suppliers now, and we'll have to pay it on all the current orders.
But surely the price was agreed.
Gosby handled all that. Or rather, he didn't. There's nothing in the contract to stop them changing their prices.
But he's already taken his commission.
We're ruined, Smith. Finished. Bankrupt.
I'll ring Gorstein's and see if they might be amenable to a surcharge in these circumstances.
I've already rung them. They laughed at me.
I'm sorry.
No, I deserve it. I should have realised there was something fishy about Gosby taking the commission and signing that agreement so easily. He didn't even argue. I was so pleased with myself. I thought, I'm finally playing their game. Howard Dursingham, master of the veneer. Ah, you should have said something.
I did.
Did you?
Yes.
Don't tell the others. Not until Monday, anyway. Let them have the weekend.
What are you going to do?
Do?
Mr. Dursingham.
Well, there's a job out east. To tell you the truth, I never really cared for any of this. And I have a strange feeling that my wife will be rather pleased.
Sadly, however, Mr. Dursingham's consideration for the feelings of his staff fails to save Miss Matfield a trip to Victoria Station, where she has been waiting, in vain, for her companion to take her to a discreet hotel on the Sussex coast.
Is Mr. Golspie there, please?
He's gone.
Oh, yes, well, I'm supposed to be meeting him. A business thing.
No, I mean he's gone. For good. Him and Miss Golspie. South Africa or South America or somewhere. He didn't rightly say. Caught a boat first thing this morning. Oh, they left a right old mess.
Did he leave a message for anyone?
Not that I know of.
Right. Thank you. You've been most helpful.
As the train pulls away, Miss Matfield walks briskly back to catch the bus to Swiss Cottage.
Excuse me. Hello?
Yes?
You left this in a telephone box. A wedding ring.
Cheap thing. It's nothing to do with me.
Oh, sorry. My mistake.
Miss Matfield refuses to stay angry. In fact, she walks with a steely resolve. A plan is forming in her head. A new job, and she's not just going to type up orders for the rest of her life.
I know about veneers.
She doesn't need Howard Dursingham or James Golspie, or any man for that matter. After all, as Mr. Golspie said to her,
anything is possible.
Go away.
It's me, Poppy, from the office.
Coming. What do you want?
I heard what happened.
Then you should stay away from me.
She's gone. And her father. They've done a runner. I'm not supposed to know, but I overheard Mr. D saying something to Mr. Smeave. We're all losing our jobs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought it might make you feel a bit better.
No. Why?
Because.
I think I went a bit mad. I've only got myself to blame.
Then you're on your way, aren't you?
What do you mean, on my way?
On your way out with me. To see a talkie. There's a new Lulu Castellar on at the palace.
I don't know.
Oh.
Cup of tea would be nice, though. There's a cafe on the corner. Angelo's.
My treat, and no arguments.
Which just leaves Herbert Smeath, who all his life has moved through the world gingerly, apprehensively, as if the worst might happen at any moment. And now it has.
What did I tell you?
Are you all right, sir?
Yes, Constable. Sorry. Actually, no, I'm not all right. Someone once asked me what the point was.
What point would that be?
The point of this street. The point of that tram. The point of the conductor collecting the fares. The point of that lamp that's just come on. The point of putting a clean collar on in the morning. The point of paying rates and taxes so that you, an officer of the law, can walk up and down Angel Pavement when someone like Golspie can breeze in and blow out that flame with a single puff.
What flame, sir?
Exactly. What flame? There is no flame.
You should have seen him. He fell right off the chair.
Edie!
Look who's popped in, Herb.
Herbert.
Oh, you do look down in the mouth, Pa. Come and tell Cousin Fred all about it.
You look like you've lost a shilling.
And found a farthing.
Get out.
Herbert?
Get out!
And that night, Herbert, Edna and Edie Smeeth sit around the kitchen table and work out a plan of action.
I'll give up the apprenticeship. I don't mind.
And I can get a job. I can earn money as well as spend it, you know.
We'll manage. We'll manage, Edie.
Mr. Smeeth feels happier and safer than he has done in many years. Well, perhaps we should leave the as-ifs to James Goldsby and his daughter.
We didn't find any angels, did we, Daddy?
No, my girl. Too damned human. The lot of them.
But perhaps he didn't look hard enough. Perhaps he never noticed the flaking door between Mr. T. Benenden's tobacconist and the boarded-up windows of Twig and Dursingham. The door without an address that perhaps one day will open to admit an angel who, after looking up and down the street for a moment, will slowly, calmly blow the last trumpet.
In Angel Pavement by J.B. Priestley, dramatised for radio by Martin Jameson, James Goldsby was played by Henry Goodman and Herbert Smeeth by Jeff Rawl. Harold Turgis was Joe Kloska, Miss Matfield, Victoria Brazier, Mr. Dursingham, Carl Prekop, Lena Goldsby, Faye Castello, Mr. Benenden, Stephen Critchlow, Poppy Sellers, Millie Binks, Edie Smeeth, Jane Purcell, Benenden's niece, Angela Curran, the cashier, Lucia Cox, and the conductor, Scott Oswald. Our guide to Angel Pavement was Marcus Brigstock. Angel Pavement was directed by Chris Wallace and is an Autolycus production for BBC Radio 4.
On BBC Radio 4, Professor Robert Winston.
The evolutionary biologist Steven Pinker says at one point, doesn't he, that music is useless.
Yes.
But you would fundamentally disagree with that.
Yes, how could one not disagree with that? Why on earth would children be singing and clapping in playgrounds if it's useless?
Examining the relationship between humans and music.
Why would football crowds and rugby crowds be singing if it's not playing any role? It's playing an incredibly important functional role.
The Science of Music on Tuesday morning at 11:30.